Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick, and check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere, every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. This is Marissa and I'll be with you for the next hour. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and discussion of deaths in custody. First up on the show, you will be hearing some audio that was broadcast at the 11th of August Defend and Dissent rally some weeks ago now. I was present live at that protest and was able to do a little interview with David Glantz, who has spoken to us on air about Palestine, but also about asylum seekers and refugees. And then after that, we will be hearing a number of speeches, one of them being Robbie Thorpe, and also another Marissa from Students Against War. So that would be Robbie Thorpe, a speech from him, and also Marissa from Students Against War. So that is the audio that you'll be hearing from pretty soon. And then after that, we will speak with Kieran, who is an activist and is also the president of the Black People's Union. So we will speak to Kieran after that. And if we have time, we'll play you some snippets from the Palestinian rally yesterday. But please pay attention to this audio, listeners, as this audio will specifically talk about the anti-protest bill that the Allan government wants to introduce into the Victorian Parliament. And that rally took place on the 12th of August on the steps of Parliament. Here is the audio.
So I'm here with David Glantz and we are at Parliament. And David, could you just explain where you are and what's happening?
Yeah, we're on the steps of Parliament. We're preparing for a rally that will be starting in the next 20 minutes or half an hour. And we are protesting against the Victorian government's plans to make protesting in the state much more difficult.
And what organisation are you from and what sort of work have you done?
Today I'm with the Defend Dissent Coalition, which is organising the rally. I'm representing Free Palestine Melbourne.
Fantastic. And why do you think, why are you protesting today?
Well, the government is basically trying to criminalise Palestine rallies and trying to make out that rallies are dangerous, disruptive and difficult. Now, they're sometimes disruptive, but rallies are not dangerous, but they're trying to use the media beat up about rallies to bring in a series of restrictions on the ability of people to wear masks on rallies, on the ability to lock down for usually for environmental protests. They want to restrict our right to protest near places of religion, and the city is full of places of religion. They want ethnic groups to sign almost like a loyalty pledge to get public money. There's a range of reasons why we're here today.
And how does that affect marginalised communities And can you be really specific about what communities these anti-protest laws will target?
Well, I know that those people who have long COVID or are otherwise immunocompromised are particularly concerned, because wearing a mask for them is not an optional extra, it's actually a very basic health and safety measure. And Jacinda Allen, disgracefully, when she announced these laws back in December, said she wanted to ban masks on rallies because people were using them to protect themselves from pepper spray. So she actually wants to make it easier for police to hurt protesters, and people who need masks will suffer along the way. I think we can assume anyone who is taking part in active disruption stands at a greater chance of being arrested. If someone is found with, for instance, ropes or locks or chains in their car on the way to a rally, that those goods can be seized. So police can stop your car and seize those goods. It's a significant step up. And the tragedy is that the media, the police, and Jacinta Allen are all using the recent Nazi march at the dead of night through Melbourne as an excuse for these moves. The police already have powers to deal with people who foment hate on our streets. Tragically, the police, the media, and the government are using the Nazis as an excuse to bring in restrictions which will be used against environmentalists, student protesters, Palestine protesters, and that's why we're here today, to say all those projected laws should be thrown in the bin. And I'm very pleased to say at the very recent State Labor conference a week and a half ago, the delegates there also told Jacinta Allen they don't want these laws to be passed. So her own members are telling her this is not a good idea, this is a restriction on the right to protest.
And in terms of police powers, from what you've read and also seen, how will that impact protest?
Well, they're already getting a raft of increased powers. The designated areas now can last for 6 months if they choose. So in other words, they can designate an area and stop and search people at whim, for a period of up to 6 months, if that's the way they go. And we know who gets stopped and searched. It's people of colour, first and foremost, who are likely to be pulled over by the police. It's young people, it's Indigenous people. Now they want the right, essentially, to arrest somebody for wearing a mask on a protest. They might get off later because they'll have medical evidence they need the mask, but they'll get arrested first and they'll get thrown in a divvy van. They will have the ability under these laws to stop a car and search it if they, quote unquote, have reasonable suspicion that there are items being carried in that car for a lockdown or a lock-on. In other words, they're going to actually stand over all sorts of protesters because they now have the option to do so if these laws are passed. And that's why we're here today, because we are doing everything we can to make sure these laws are not passed.
Absolutely. And what about places of worship? I believe that there may be a proposed law to look at designated places, you know, areas outside places of worship where people can't protest.
It seems even they realise they actually have some difficulty with this. They've indicated they may deal with this with separate legislation. But we are standing here on the steps of Parliament. There is a synagogue 300 metres from where we are. So are we now protesting too close to a synagogue? If we were meeting at the State Library, there's a church, Christian church, directly across the road. Does that mean we can't rally at the State Library? The city is full of places of worship. Now, there's a horrible precedent in New South Wales where the State Labor government there has passed a law saying you can't protest near a place of worship, but they haven't specified what near means. They're going to leave it to the police. So
yeah.
One cop might say 50 metres is too close, another one might say 150 metres is too close. It's a recipe for cops standing over protesters and making our lives hell. Whereas just a couple of nights ago, they gave an escort to 100 Nazis through the streets of Melbourne.
Correct. And, you know, this escort, what happened with that?
Well, it was 1:15 in the morning, so I suspect, to be fair, the police were caught on the hop. Everybody else was caught on the hop, and that's what the Nazis do. They hold stunts with no advance notice in order to, try and grab headlines. The police say they need the power to make people remove their masks. The Nazis usually march with balaclavas covering their faces. But they were carrying banners which were racist and offensive. The police could have, if they'd chosen and if they'd had the numbers, they could have stepped in and broken up that march. Oh. But instead of breaking up the Nazi march, they call for more powers, and I'll bet you London to a brick those powers be used against people like us and not against the Nazis.
Exactly, and that also involves forest defenders as well?
Environmentalists, Palestine protesters, trans right protesters, unionists. I mean, basically anybody who is standing up for their rights and protesting against unfairness, inequality and oppression will find their life either a lot or a little more difficult as a result of these proposed laws.
An injury to one is an injury to all, David. Are there any final comments before we finish?
Well, tonight is a little bit wet, and we're probably
very
not going to get quite as big a crowd as we hoped for, but the legislation has yet to be tabled in Parliament. We are keeping a very close eye on that. We will call further rallies, and I'd encourage people to come along. Follow us on Instagram, Defend Dissent Coalition, and get along to our next rally, because this fight is far from over.
Perfect. And actually, just as a postscript, I think there are a number of speakers. We've got Farida, who's a rally organiser, who'll be speaking, isn't it?
Robbie Thorpe is going to be with us. Catherine...
from the Greens?
Copsley from the Greens.
Yep.
May Saif from Free Palestine Melbourne. There'll be a student here from Students Against War, because there's been a lot of repression on campuses. And I must admit, I'm beginning... I think Jordy Silverstein from the Loud Jew Collective.
Oh.
Apologies to anyone I've forgotten. But
nah,
it's a great lineup in the rain.
It is indeed. Well, yep. Thank you so much, David. And we'll catch you very, very soon.
Okay, thanks, Marissa.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
All right, we're going to roll with this one. Okay, our next speaker is Marisha from Students Against War. Give her a round of applause.
Thanks, everyone.
It's not loud enough.
Oh, okay.
Testing. All right, beautiful. Before I start, I also want to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Wurundjeri people, the Kulin Nation. We're on unceded, stolen land, and Indigenous people have been at the forefront of so many movements against fascism, against colonialism. So I think it's so important to pay respects to that. So some of you might know that this year, universities across the country have increasingly clamped down on the Palestine movement on campus.
Shame.
At the University of Melbourne, where I'm at, we've seen a ban on indoor protests, a Wi-Fi tracking policy, and an adoption of an expanded version of the already contested IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which states that any criticism of Israel equates to anti-Semitism. Shame! These anti-protest rules have come as a direct response to the sustained mass movement for Palestine experienced last year. At UniMelb, this culminated in a 10-day sit-in at Mapwoods Hall, where, despite threats of police violence and arrest, students and staff mobilized together to protect the students inside the building. And this year, an integral part of our fight for Palestine on campus is the absolute rejection of the university's calls of anti-Semitism that provides their political cover to the increasing repression we've been experiencing on campus. Just recently, two students were suspended and another two expelled for participating in a protest at, against a UniMail professor responsible for coordinating the joint PhD program between UniMail and the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Yay! The Hebrew University is an academic institution built on occupied East Jerusalem and actively contributing to the IDF technology and intelligence research and development. And of course, this comes with, alongside billions of dollars worth of investments and partnerships with weapons manufacturers. Our universities are deeply complicit in the genocide and continued brutal occupation of Palestinians. Shame. The university's political commitment to Israel and its genocide comes hand in hand with the Australian government's lockstep commitment to transforming our universities into hubs of war. Shame! One blatant example, UniMail has vowed to invest research into AUKUS, and this has manifested in the new nuclear submarines engineering course, where students are being funneled into a program that directly contributes to death. Therefore, our fight for a free Palestine is also deeply connected with our fight against the continued militarization of our universities. Recently, we've seen Anthony Albanese express, quote, concerns about the humanitarian devastation in Gaza. But on the other hand, we're seeing him continue to supply parts of the F-35 fighter jet to Israel. Showing where our government's real interest lies in the full backing of a genocidal apartheid state.
Shame. They're all liars.
But there is a way to fight this. This is like our the Australian government's drive to war. And that's through collective mass action of students, university staff, and workers alike. As we saw in the Sydney Harbour Bridge March for Humanity, that was an incredible illustration of how mass action can mobilize the people and exert pressure on the Labor government that is deeply complicit in this genocide. In this march, we saw student groups across the state come together. Incredibly, 5,000 teachers mobilized, a result of the consistent hard work of rank and file staff undertaking the union work in the lead up to the march. This is the kind of organization we need to sanction Israel, to demand the Labor government sanction Israel more. In every lecture hall and classroom, Students Against War is mobilizing broad layers of students into collective action. Together we can mobilize our anger into action that can really put the university on trial. We're pushing, currently we're pushing for an official student union special general meeting to push for pro-Palestine motions that we hope will be voted on to be adopted as official policy. These motions are so important because they will directly address the university's draconian repression of Palestine activism, including the indoor protest ban. And also demand the university cut ties with apartheid Israel's, such as its academic ties with Hebrew University, and importantly, calling for a democratic one state of Palestine, as well as the right of Palestinian resistance.
Woo! Free Palestine!
And, incredibly, over the span of about 2 weeks, we were able to garner about 750 student signatures showing full support of these motions. And this just shows the immense appetite of uni students across campuses nationwide, the appetite to organize for Palestine, to agitate for Palestine. And Students Against War, together with other groups across campus, are organizing a student walkout to mobilize this immense student appetite into a walkout on September 10th. Woo! Together, these oppressive rules won't stop us. And, you know, like, I think for us students, like, we're so inspired by all the rank and file work that happens in the workplaces, in the hospitals, you know, that inspires like us students to go out into every lecture hall, every classroom, talk to students and collectively mobilize to demand Labor actually sanction Israel and cut the ties. Thank you.
On and not backing down, and that is the history of students standing up for what's right. We love that. We're going to roll straight into our very amazing next speaker, Korata Tangalung Elder Duran Bongiolini Robbie Thorpe.
If you don't fight, you lose. That's been our experience as Aboriginal people in this country. This is an illegal occupation. It's a right extremist. They're clearly guilty of genocide of our people. And actually, if it wasn't for the acts of terror and the policies of genocide, this place wouldn't exist. That's what it's based on. They've been denying our most basic and fundamental human rights from the get-go. Where have the people been? We've allowed this to manifest to what it is. It's places like Australia that enable places like Israel and other fascists around the world. And this is a continent here. Wasn't that long ago when it was 100% black people. Not that long ago. Look at it now. Where's the recognition of our human rights? If we don't stand up for others' human rights, don't expect people to stand up for your human rights when the time comes. We've got a right to defend ourselves. Haven't we? They're fascists. They're racist extremists. Australia's an institution of racism. Very clear cut. And what are we talking about here? Now we need to stand up. Just on that, I just want to say good on yous. Coming out tonight. And we need to do this. Don't give it up. Don't stop fighting for our rights here. Otherwise, what's going to happen next? Don't keep allowing these people to get away with it. They're criminals. Australia's a crime scene, all of it. We're all living on the proceeds here. It was intentional, this genocide. Have a look at what that UOC Truth Commission, for whatever that's worth. One of their findings, it was genocide. So that changes everything, right? That's right. Okay. Can we go into someone's homeland and just kill everybody with impunity and get away with it? You know, you've got to stand up for the rights of the Aboriginal people in this country. Because that underpins everybody else's. Now, we've got just cause here to stand up against this place. And if it wasn't for protesting, I don't know what I would have been doing all my life. Because that's all of it being doing. Don't give up the right to fight, to protest and stand up to this place here. They're full of shit. They're liars. And liars and murderers are weak. They can't really stand to the truth. And that's what we've got. We've got the truth on our side. And we've got the spirit of this land. I really don't think people understand the gravity, the dimension, or the magnitude of crime scene Australia. We've allowed this to manifest into what it is. I'm not saying the people gathered. The people are just taking it for granted. Here. It's one hell of a crime scene. You're standing knee deep in blood. Our blood, the original people. Where's our human rights? Yeah. We got a right to stand up, not just to protest peacefully. We got a right to defend ourselves from terror. So we've got to be thinking about this, folks. Let's keep standing together. That's all we've got to do. Keep turning up, and it's a good sign. If we can come out in this sort of weather like we are today, that's really heartening. I made it an effort to come out here today because I think it's really important. You know, it's like the end of the day. Look at the climate here. Destroyed this land, been raping, pillaging, plundering the whole time. That's what they do. And colonizers didn't bring any wealth here. They stole it all. Everything stolen, right? We don't owe them nothing. We're going to demand our human rights are recognised for all of us. That's what defeats them when we stand together. Yeah, I don't know whether we've got human rights laws in this country. We've got human rights charters, which is you can decide whether you just take any notice out or not. Is there actually human rights legislation? No, I don't think there is. I'm not 100% sure about that, but let's fight for that. Let's get our human rights enshrined in the law here. We've got something to fight with then. Can't allow these people to do this to us. You know, they've got a history of committing genocide, killing people with impunity. Look at the jail rates of Aboriginal people in this country. That's okay, right? This is our land. This is our land. We're the most jailed people on earth. Men, women and children. Now what's wrong with it? What's wrong with this country? Anyway, I'm really proud of people coming out today. Don't stop the fight. Don't stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And sooner or later, this bullshit operation here is going to fall over. Sooner or later.
And you just heard some live coverage from the Defend and Dissent rally that happened on the 12th of August on the steps of Parliament, where dozens of community groups rallied at State Parliament and marched through the CBD from 5:30 p.m. against the Allan government's proposed new anti-protest laws. And shortly, we will be speaking with Karen, President of the Black People's Union and longtime activist, about treaty and many other topics. Karen also does a radio show at 3CR, and we will speak to him shortly after this announcement.
Friends of 3CR, Les Thomas and Kavisha Mazzella, are joining forces for a powerful Gaza music fundraiser and to launch The Firing Line, their stirring anthem against genocide. After a shock venue cancellation, they found a new home at the Curtin Hotel, opposite Trades Hall on Lygon Street in Carlton. Join them 3 p.m. on Sunday, August 31. Book now through Austix or the John Curtin website. Every ticket helps get vital support to those who need it most in Gaza. A 3CR supporter.
Out there on the firing line, see the faces left behind.
Capitalism's inherent barbarism is on full display, from the genocide in Gaza and the rise of the far right, to growing militarism and the climate crisis.
We need to radically change the way society is organised.
Join us for the upcoming Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, held on September 5th to the 7th at the Balam Place in Brunswick.
We will be bringing together activists from across the Indo-Pacific, sharing experiences to resist capitalism's drive to barbarism and build the mass movements that we need.
Anyone who wants to be part of the discussion on how we can build a left-wing alternative is welcome to attend.
Featuring international guests from the United States, Pakistan, India, Malaysia, and Brazil, along with local campaigners.
Organised by Green Left and Socialist Alliance. Find out more by going to ecosocialism.org.au.
Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back with the Do and Time show, and we are going to be speaking now with Kieran, who is president of the Black People's Union, about treaty and also what's happening with the treaty process. And I know that Kieran has been doing quite a lot of work too in other actions as well. Hello, Kieran. Welcome.
Hey, how you going?
Good. Good to see you. Good to have you back again.
Yeah.
And I believe you also do a show at 3CR?
One and a quarter, I suppose. I've got a weekly show on Wednesdays at 12 o'clock, Yilliman, and I'm one of the co-hosts of Earth Matters. I'm on Earth Matters on Sunday once every four or so weeks.
Beautiful. You know what? I think I did hear you, actually, on Earth Matters.
Oh,
that's good for you.
Yeah, cheers.
Now, pretty important for First Nations participation on Earth Matters and forest defending and all that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kieran, can you start off just by telling us what land you're from and what you're on?
So I'm from Waniwandiyin country, which is a clan group up in the Yulin Nation on the south coast of what's now known as New South Wales. It's around the Nowra Jervis Bay area. Currently, though, I'm on Gunai Kurnai country.
Fantastic. And just to issue a content warning for listeners that we will be speaking about very, very sensitive material, and the Do and Time show does broadcast sensitive material about First Nations massacres, deaths in custody, and stuff about treaty.
Yeah.
So, Kieran, can you tell us a little bit about what's been happening with treaty and, you know, how you feel about it?
There's a bit to talk about here. But, you know, this is something that the state treaties, I'm going to, you know, call them treaties with my little air quotes that the listeners obviously can't see, but, you know, when you hear the word treaty, I'm doing my little air quotes. But these state treaties, you know, they kicked off down here in Victoria, but they've now spread to other states as well. New South Wales has just recently announced their treaty commissioners and, you know, has started, I'm using my air quotes again when I say consultations, but, you know, have started consultations as well up in New South Wales. And Queensland and South Australia are also following suit there. Now, just in regards to, like, New South Wales, because that's my country up there, they're following much of the same playbook as the Voice to Parliament and the lead-up to the Voice to Parliament, the consultations that they had. So, you know, in the lead-up to the Voice to Parliament and the Uluru Statement from the Heart, you know, they had these consultations around Australia, but quite a lot of these consultations were exclusive events. You know, they weren't events where community members who were actually, you know, staunch members of their community and politically active weren't allowed to actually come to these events. And in fact, we had Megan Davis back in 2022 get up at the press conference and actually brag about this, brag about how they had excluded some of the more stauncher black fellas who, you know, were cynical or critical of the government. And also, when they did have these consultations, it was very much consultations with, you know, different body corporates and land councils and all of these other organisations that are essentially funded and administered by the government themselves. Now, they're following this same playbook up in New South Wales with the treaty up there. They've announced these consultations that are coming up, but they've, you know, haven't actually broadcast when the dates will be. Or when they do it literally like two or three days before the consultation is on. And, you know, you don't find out until after the fact unless you're following, you know, certain social media pages, essentially. And for the most part, it's the same sort of people coming to these consultations for treaty. You know, your body corporates and your land councils and all of these other organisations that are essentially beholden to the government. Now, you know, because of that, they've cut out quite a lot of the, you know, more cynical and more stauncher voices. But it's all a part of their playbook at the end of the day. And, you know, when we look at it as well, they're calling them treaties, but they're not actual treaties, which is something that, you know, is very important to understand here. You know, they're not real treaties. Real treaties are binding agreements under international law between two or more sovereign bodies. But the way that these have been proposed is they're just domestic agreements that take the form of state legislation. Now, because it is that state legislation, it means any future government of the day can repeal them, they can amend them, or they can suspend them altogether. And, you know, this is something that we have to be very cautious about because, you know, they might give us some great things today, but then they could turn around and take it away tomorrow and there's nothing we could do about it. And at the end of the day as well, because they are these domestic agreements, they don't actually carry weight to give real sweeping changes. So, you know, stuff like designated seats in Parliament, for example, or sovereign authority over lands and resources, because the state doesn't actually have the power to grant us that, you know, not without a constitution. Referendum, to change the constitution. Now, we also know that if they were to have a referendum for these sort of things, you know, 75% of Australians are racist towards Indigenous people. You know, we know that a referendum to change the constitution, to give us things like seats in Parliament, wouldn't actually pass at the end of the day. Now, you know, we could essentially have real treaties if we really wanted to, but they would have to be proper treaties under international law, and we would have to sign them with the Crown itself, and then the Crown could rely on its reserve powers to be able to actually give us stuff like designated seats in Parliament or, you know, more wider sweeping changes that will actually be beneficial for our communities. And another thing as well, you know, at the end of the day, when we look at other treaties that have been signed between Indigenous people in places like Aotearoa and, you know, across Turtle Island up in Canada and the United States, when we look at those treaties, they've all been violated as well. You know, there isn't a single one of those treaties that hasn't been violated. And most of the time they've actually been violated, you know, dozens or even hundreds of times. And every time they're violated, for the most part, it's the colonies' courts that decide, you know, the level of the violation and whether or not it was actually a violation and, you know, what the compensation is. And in the very rare circumstances where there has been stuff like compensation for these violations, you know, they essentially get sweet FA. There's not real proper compensation for the level of violation that occurred. And at the end of the day too, you know, we just need to look at the stats. You know, you look at the Maori stats, for example, or the First Nations stats in Turtle Island, and they live under similar conditions to what we live under here. You know, they've got overrepresentation in the prisons, in stuff like child removal. They've got stuff like, you know, higher illiteracy rates and higher unemployment rates and higher poverty rates and homelessness rates. You know, treaties haven't given them equality. So why would we think it would be any different here with just a bunch of state legislation at the end of the day?
It's interesting, and I'm so glad that we're hearing this because, you know, there is a lot of talk about treaty, but at the moment, nothing's really happened.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's set up that way. You know, it's just political theatre in many ways. You know, they're talking about treaty. They're using all these progressive words and, you know, they're making out like they're listening to First Nations people and, you know, they're going to bring forward this great treaty that's going to reform things. But at the end of the day, it's mostly just political theatre so that the government can tick a box and say, look, we signed a treaty, and then it can just continue on business as usual.
I mean, it's really interesting because let's see if we can tie this into the Europe Justice Commission. They have done some really great work despite all this, haven't they? But unfortunately, it talks about the First Peoples Assembly, and it says that in the summary report, it actually says that the treaty authority and historic milestones have made Victoria a leader in the journey towards truth and justice. What do you make of that?
Look, I think that justice is not what's actually, happened with this this Truth Commission thing, the Truth and Justice Commission. At the end of the day, look, don't get me wrong, it's great that a lot of First Nations people have been able to, get out there and have their say and tell about their experiences. But at the end of the day, we've got to look at what material impacts it's actually having. Now, I actually spoke to the Deputy Commissioner, Travis Lovett, last year at one of the treaty meetings about the Europe Justice Commission. And it's got no intention and no power to be able to prosecute living criminals if it did, the government wouldn't have allowed the Europe Truth Commission to go forward in the first place. And in fact, when we actually delve into it a bit more, we see that it does the opposite, because it's essentially a royal commission, right? And anyone who appears at a royal commission and gives evidence at a royal commission is essentially made immune to prosecution. So we know that these people who are giving evidence of the crimes that they or their family have committed in relation to stuff like genocide and apartheid and dispossession, settlers I'm talking about here, the ones who have committed these acts in the past, essentially by getting up at the Europe Truth Commission and admitting all this stuff, they get out of jail free card at the end of it all. So, we know that these people giving this evidence are becoming immune to civil suits in the future and to criminal charges. And genocide and apartheid is not something that happened, decades or hundreds of years ago. It's still very much ongoing here. And we've still got a lot of people still alive who were involved in stuff like massacres and apartheid and, policies which caused genocide against our people. Many of these people are still alive and they're just becoming immune to any future charges as a result of this Truth Commission. So, it's something that, we really have to weigh up here when we're looking at that. Also on that note as well, like being a royal commission, when we look at these past royal commissions, we know that they make little to no changes. Look at the Royal Commission to Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, right? That was 34 years ago, and they gave hundreds of recommendations to lessen our over-incarceration and our deaths in custody, and ever since, things have gotten worse and worse every single year, while the state and the federal governments have ignored most of these recommendations. And, I'm talking about recommendations like removing the hanging points from cells. Our people have the world's highest incarceration rate. We have the world's highest suicide rate. But yet they refuse to do stuff like implement recommendations to take hanging points out of cells so our people, who are the most jailed and the most suicidal people in the world, can't kill ourselves in a cell. That's the reality we live with. And, likewise, when we look at stuff like the Bringing Them Home report, that was 28 years ago. And ever since, child removal has gotten worse and worse every year. Nearly 20 years ago, we had Kevin Rudd get up giving, this grand apology in Parliament to the stolen generations. And every year since, more and more kids are taken and they're taken at higher rates. Today, something like one in four of our kids are taken. And, that's higher than during the so-called stolen generations of the 1900s. The stolen generations never ended. They're very much ongoing. And, when we look at this Europe Truth Commission, they're going to hand down recommendations. And, the recommendations might be great recommendations, don't get me wrong, but they're worth nothing if the government doesn't implement them. And, are we going to be here in 30 years' time still talking about the recommendations from the Europe Truth Commission and why they haven't been implemented yet?
Well, that's why when I spoke to Auntie Jill, who had a lot to say about all this as well from VACO, I think it's pronounced. And I said to her, well, I hope that the Europe Commission reports are not going to be collecting dust at the State Library.
Yeah. And, if we're to look at the history, that's what they're going to be doing. Same as these other royal commissions.
Don't get me wrong, though. I mean, it is fantastic that they were able to tell, First Nations people would tell their stories, that it is on public record. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
But where to from here? I mean, what would be, as a First Nations person and also, as the Black People's Union, what would be your vision and your position in regards to treaty on behalf of your people?
The position of the BPU is that There's always been treaties between First Nations people across this continent. You know, we've had agreements between us that go back millennia. Most of those agreements, though, have been very much fractured by colonisation. So what our agenda is in relation to treaty is for First Nations people to re-energise and, you know, renew those treaties and agreements that we had between each other, so that way we could actually have a stronger bargaining position to begin with. You know, when we look at stuff like the Native Title Act and the way that Native Title pitted all these Indigenous communities and families and nations against each other, you know, there's the same potential with these treaties to pit nations against each other, whereas if we were all at the table together and we had that, you know, combined stronger stance, it would mean that we would be in a lot better bargaining position. And then if MOB wanted to pursue a treaty, you know, we could actually pursue a real international treaty under international law that would allow us to do stuff like, you know, go to the international, the ICJ and, you know, these other international courts if Australia did violate that treaty. You know, because as it currently stands, any, you know, so-called treaty that we could enter into with them would just be a domestic agreement, and it would be at the mercy of, you know, the High Court of Australia at the end of the day.
Absolutely. But can this be done?
Well, I think it can. You know, it's a massive undertaking, of course. But, you know, we've got no other choice at the end of the day, you know, because we know at the end of the day, if we just go ahead with these state treaties and we go ahead with, you know, these royal commissions and whatever else, things aren't actually going to change for us. You know, they're not going to stop our over-incarceration and our deaths in custody. They're not going to stop the child removal. They're not going to house all the homeless blackfellas out there, or, you know, provide them with jobs and education. And they're not going to empower our sovereignty either at the end of the day.
I mean, really, you know, sovereignty over the land has not been lawfully acquired, has it?
Yeah, well, that's another big a big thing to, you know, really touch on with these treaties, is the fact that, you know, we are in a unique position here where our sovereignty is still legally intact. You know, you look at places like, again, like New Zealand, Canada and the United States, you know, there's a question there as to whether or not they still have sovereign authority over their lands and their people, because they have signed treaties, and they have essentially, through signing those treaties, given the explicit permission for those colonial governments to, you know, control the land and control the communities and the resources and whatever else. You know, now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we're in a power here to necessarily exercise our sovereignty. You know, we don't have an army, for example. We can't go out and, you know, physically stop the government stealing our resources through mines and whatever else and stuff like that. But legally, we still have the right of, you know, sovereign authority over our land. So if we were to, you know, retain that, we would have to denounce the occupation that we live under. Whereas, you know, signing these treaties essentially gives consent for the government and for the mining corporations and whatever else to just continue on business as usual. And, you know, actually this is a big part of that whole voice to parliament stuff. You know, the voice to parliament was essentially constitutional recognition. At the end of the day, that's what it was all based in. That's why they had to have a referendum to insert us into the constitution. It's actually because back in the 90s, you had mining companies like, I think they were called Western Mining. They were one of the companies that merged with BHP, but you had these mining CEOs and all these mining lobbyists actually lobbied the government back in the 90s explicitly around First Nations sovereignty and how that needed to be extinguished, because they saw First Nations sovereignty as the single biggest threat to future extraction. And ever since, the government has been trying to get us into their constitution. You know, the voice to parliament was, I think, like the fourth or the fifth attempt at them trying to shove us in their constitution since the 90s, and since all those mining lobby groups, you know, pressured John Howard. And in fact, it was actually one of John Howard's campaign promises, you know, back in 2007, that if he was re-elected, he would hold a referendum to insert us into the constitution.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that's how far back it goes. And the very first group to actually propose it politically was the Young Liberals back in the 90s.
My goodness. I'm not surprised, and yet Peter Dutton was so against it.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it was tactical for him to be against it because it wasn't his party that proposed it, and you know, they wanted to oust Labor so they could get in themselves. That, and look at the Liberal Party in the shambles it's been in for the last decade and a half. You know, they've had how many coups where whoever's the leader's, you know, been ousted and somebody else has been inserted, and you know, they don't know their rights from their left.
Political theatre. Political theatre.
Yep, definitely.
But it's so interesting. I mean, you know, you're speaking about this and it just makes me think, you know, it's so important to have consultations with all clans.
Yeah, definitely.
And but interestingly, as I've been looking, because I've been doing a bit of research on this myself, and the report says exactly what you're saying, but I think that the Europe Justice Commission is hoping that the government will help, which I don't think it will.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, we should have hope, but at the end of the day, we also have to be, you know, realistic, and we have to look at the way that they've acted for the last decades and the last, you know, 124 years since Federation, and they've never given any kind of, you know, they've never given me any reason to believe that they're acting in good faith at the end of the day. You know, if they wanted to act in good faith, they could implement those recommendations that already exist, you know, from the Royal Commission to Aboriginal Deaths in Custody and the Bringing Them Home report. You know, instead, they keep us locked up at the world's highest rates. You know, I actually had a look the other day because I heard an announcement on 3CR about, you know, black people today in Australia are incarcerated at 5 times the rate of black people in South Africa back in 93 at the height of apartheid.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I thought, you know, that's pretty like hectic, you know, and I went and done a bit of fact checking myself, and it's not 5 times the rate, it's actually 6.8 times the rate, you know, nearly 7 times the rate. The apartheid's still very much alive here in Australia, and the government isn't making any steps to end that. You know, it's 7 times the rate our people are locked up compared to apartheid South Africa. It's ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous, and, you know, most of the interviews on the Doin' Time show, I mean, don't get me wrong, we look at prisoners' rights as well and women in prison and, like, of all cultures. However, you know, the crux of the Doin' Time show is all about colonisation, deaths in custody. I would say every third week I could be covering a death in custody or an inquest or an interview with a bereaved family member or a lawyer associated with death in custody, or even allies, you know, people that have got lived experience of prison,
yeah,
will report on the figures.
Yeah, they're absolutely shocking figures, and you know, the thing is too, they get worse every year. And yeah, they're not changing, they're not getting any better. You know, it's not ending; it's just getting worse and worse every year.
And, of course, you've got the bail laws now.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, something that is quite often promoted in the media and by parties as being something progressive. But then when you actually, you know, boil it down and look at the stats, it means that we've got more blackfellas that are locked up.
Indeed. Kieran, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Were you at the rally, the Defend and Dissent rally in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago? It's an anti-protest bill that the Victorian Parliament is trying to put in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a little bit around that, but not fully around it. But,
okay.
You know, it's more attacks on our rights and our ability to be able to, you know, protest these stuff. And it's very much tied to what's happening now with Palestine and Israel and, you know, the amount of people that have been protesting week in and week out around that. As well as, you know, all the other, you know, actions that have gone hand in hand with those protests, stuff like blocking the dock and, you know, blocking, you know, weapons factories and whatever else. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's just more ways to, you know, police us. And at the end of the day, too, you know, people talk about fascism. You know, we live in fascism here. You know, Australia is a fascist state. It always has been, because fascism is just colonialism turned inwards. And it's always been a colonial state ever since, you know, 1788. And I think one thing that's really happened over the last 2 years is a lot of people have been able to recognise what Australia actually is and the role that it plays on the world stage in upholding stuff like imperialism and colonialism and Western hegemony. So, you know, in that way, like the last 2 years, there's been a really big shift in political consciousness in Australia. You know, we've still got a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But, you know, there has been quite a large shift and more people are now able to actually see Australia for what it is.
Indeed, it's very true. We're nearing the end of our show. Thank you so much, Kieran, and hopefully we can connect again soon.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll talk to you then.
Thanks. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Z the People from 47 Soul. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, Free Palestine.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
And we've just reached almost the end of the Doin' Time show. And thank you to Kieran for coming onto the show. And we brought you some audio from the Defend and Dissent rally that happened a couple of weeks ago. So it's goodbye from Marissa. Climate Action is up next. And stay tuned every Monday for the Doin' Time show, 4 till 5. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye.
As long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter what your name is, we got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we shout it? Are you the one who's always ready with a helping hand? Are you the one who understands this family plan? Black fella, doesn't matter what your color.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.